It has been a long week. We broke down the complexities over school choice, the cost of repealing Obamacare, and the threat of global warming. So as we do every Friday, relax a little. We've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for The Break Room.
You know, when you're at that place and you're writing and, you know, the character arc has gone up and down and the narrative arc has circled, and then you just need to print it.
What would shopping look like if you could walk into a store, grab what you want, and just go?
According to one principal in the district, there is a shortage of qualified full-time teachers. That's the first problem. The second is also a shortfall in substitutes.
We are in Savannah this week for the Savannah Book Festival. Joining us in the break room, four distinguished authors. Sports writer Alejandro Dunois is speaking at the festival. He's author of The Boys of Dunbar, and he's in studio with me in Savannah. Atlanta-based crime novelist Karen Slaughter is with us. Her book, Pretty Girls, is now out in paperback. Nikki Salcedo as well. She's the author of the novel All Beautiful Things. And Atlanta author Mike Lowry, who writes a series of books that encourage kids to doodle. In the books, his latest is The Pursuit of the Pesky Pizza Pirate. Welcome, all authors.
Good morning.
Hello.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Alejandro's the only one I can actually look in the eyes, so the rest of you will just have to feel intimidated at a remove. but we're going to talk a lot about book-related topics, and I want to start in the library, aptly. Having a late library book is no joke.
You took this book out in 1971.
Yes, and I returned it in 1971.
Yeah, 71. That was my first year on the job.
I returned that book. I remember it very specifically.
You're a comedian. You make people laugh.
I try.
You think this is all a big joke, don't you?
Well, libraries are now beginning to ease up on eliminating or maybe reducing some of those late fines. States like Illinois, Massachusetts, California, and Ohio. A few years ago, the American Library Association issued a policy brief on services for the poor, and it vowed to promote the removal of these fees and fines. Should libraries get rid of their late fees? Karen, what do you think? Will that just make people not return their books?
Well, I mean, I think if somebody's not going to return a book and they're going to be a jerk about it, they're going to be a jerk because that's their way of life. But, you know, the thing is, people don't understand libraries are nonprofit businesses. And to have someone tasked with tracking down people who are late or who aren't paying fines, that's a big chunk of their job for a lot of these people. I mean, some library systems have turned over to collections. And, you know, they don't want to be in the business of tracking people down. So I think you have to rely on the honor system. So I support the ALA in removing that. I will say the Library of Congress, though, congressmen are the worst. Some of them keep those books and never give them back.
Nikki and Mike, what do you guys think?
So my thought is, first off, is that I do think it's a good idea. So I like the idea that there wouldn't be late fines, but it also reminds me of a library book that I saw in Virginia at a really small library that I used to go to, and it was an out-of-print edition of a Dave Eggers book. And I'm definitely going to go back to that library very soon and check that book out, and then I'm just going to hold on to it.
You can't say that on the air. I mean, you'll forget.
That's just stealing a Dave Eggers book. Yeah. Nikki, what do you think?
Well, it would be good for me because I'm scared of the library right now. Everywhere I go, I have overdue fines. I probably have fines at any library system I've ever belonged to. And so if they got rid of them, I could feel safe to walk back into the library without feeling like a criminal. So that would be good for me.
But would there be 100? No fees at all? I mean, even just for never returning something?
There would be different strategies, but I would still be more likely to check out.
To be clear, we're only talking about late fines here.
Late fines.
Mike would probably be on the hook for that Dave Eggers book.
Okay, well, I take it back.
Well, you know, growing up in New York City as a low-income kid, the library was a magical place for me. It was a place where I really started to first formulate some dreams and see things outside of my neighborhood. And I think anything that encourages, especially kids from the lower economic strata, to be able to be in the library and not be fearful of a financial penalty in terms of not bringing the book back in on time. I bring my daughters to the public library in Baltimore. We're often straddled with these late fees that I tell them that they're responsible for. And sometimes I see that they are hesitant to go to the library and explore and bring these books for the simple fact that they're already thinking about the late fee because they might not be cognizant of the deadline and bringing it back. And they don't like having that money taken out of their pocket. So I'm all for eradicating these late fees so that kids have access to these wonderful institutions that help them grow and nourish their minds.
All right, well, let's move from money to emotions. Most of us have at least a special collection to one book that we found in a library.
I've known from the very first book that misery had to be born of nobility, and I was right. Oh, misery's alive! Misery's alive! Oh, it's so romantic! Oh, this whole house is going to be filled with romance! I'm going to put on my Liberace records.
All right, our emotional reaction to fiction might have a mathematical basis. That's according to researchers at the University of Vermont. They analyzed 1,300 works of fiction, and they say almost all of them provide one of six emotional experiences. And the sentences in many of these works were found to form fractal patterns. So their conclusion is that understanding the mathematical underpinnings of fiction can actually help us learn more about great art. Do you buy that? Let me start with you here, and Alejandro first. Does math help us understand fiction?
You know, I'm not necessarily sure about the correlation, but I do know that people that read have the capacity to do so much more. People that can write can excel in many different fields and disciplines. And so I do think there is a certain correlation between people that understand sentence structure and people that spend a great amount of time reading benefit in so many other ways than just Annie and Misery talking about he didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car.
Well, then let me go to Karen. What do you think? Math? Do you buy it?
No, I don't. Primarily because emotions are anecdotal. So how do they quantify an emotional response? I always say in music, one man's wham is another man's Beatles. So I'm really hesitant to believe that. But, you know, math is, you can clear your throat and assign a mathematical equation to it. Math is everywhere. And I don't buy that. I think that every story touches on different kinds of emotions, and every book. I mean, I know people who love Misery, and I know people who can't stand it.
Yeah, that's true enough. Nikki?
I actually think math is behind everything we do, and I love the idea of looking at the matrix with, you know, ones and zeros or the fractal pattern. I would hate for writers to think about that while they're creating, because there is the emotion in the creation. But after a book is written, if someone wanted to run it through a machine and create a fractal, you know, picture of it, I think that would be great.
Mike?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think that I do agree that it just sort of seems like maybe math was added to something later where it doesn't necessarily have to match up and fit. And it seems like just another area that the more you take something apart, then it's just kind of broken in the end of it.
The autopsy theory.
Yeah.
Well, how do you peer review it also? You know, the thing about science is you have to be able to reproduce it. So,
right. You
know, how do you explain Da Vinci Code or anything Gillian Flynn has written? You know, are you saying they have the mathematical patterns that are similar? I don't think you can quantify that.
No, I agree.
Well, we only have about 2 minutes before we have to take a pause, but let's see if we can talk about this particular issue. Another study from Michigan State University found that preschoolers who play together tend to take on each other's personality traits. And I wonder, finding out that it's not just genetics, but it's also what rubs off, is that good news or bad? Nikki, let's start with you.
Bad news. They never pick up good habits from other kids in class. They always pick up the horrible habits. They bite, they spit, they pick their nose, they talk in the baby voice. So, yeah, this is bad news. Kids are not looking at the stellar, good, studious student writing a book or doing fractal patterns. They're looking at the one, you know, scraping away at the edge of their desk.
Mike, good news or bad?
I mean, I think that I did pick up really good traits when I was younger. I mean, I became really competitive with studying and that sort of thing. But I also think that this tends to sound like one of these studies where they're doing a blanket statement about the way that kids learn based off of just really just little pinpoints of data that they're getting. And I have never had the
concerns about the study, which it sounds like something you would say, Karen.
Well, you know, it made me think of this study they did of kids who were in boarding school. And they found out that boys who have one really successful boy, they just give up. If, you know, they're like, he's the successful boy, we're just going to chillax. And with girls, if there's one really successful girl, the other girls try to strive to be just as successful. So, you know,
so
maybe there's
it's gendered.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's Friday. We're in the break room. We are live from Savannah. We're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about recess, the politics of libraries, and more. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room like we do every Friday. I am live in Savannah. We're here for the Savannah Book Festival, and so we have an all-authors break room panel, so it should be very smart. Joining me are Alejandro Danois, Karen Slaughter, Nikki Salcedo, and Mike Lowry. And we want to say thank you, speaking of Savannah, to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that fuels our break room guests' brains, and they are online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, we talked earlier about how libraries might do away with late fees, but that's not the only way that they're making headlines. More librarians are becoming politically active, especially in response to the president's suspended travel ban. An assistant library director in Nebraska created graphics that say libraries are for everyone, referring to immigrants and refugees, and some people took exception to that. Now libraries across the country are reposting those images. Some people say the librarians need to keep their noses out of politics. What do you think? Let's start with you, Alejandro. Should librarians be apolitical?
Well, I don't think we're at a time in our country where anyone can afford to be apolitical. And when you're looking at the institution that is the public library, it's about access, it's about inclusivity, it's about providing opportunities for people to come from all different walks of life to be able to have access to these beautiful materials that can help elevate folks. So I think anyone that's going to speak in support of everyone having access to a great place like the library, I'm all for it. And I think it's a wonderful thing for the librarians to say, this is a place for everybody.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it is not something out of the question that very soon it's going to be another publicly funded thing that the current administration just doesn't see as a necessary thing. And it could absolutely be on the chopping block soon.
So Karen, do you think that the saying libraries are for everyone, do you see that as inherently political?
I think that what Alejandro said is correct. Anyone's going to politicize stuff. I mean, no one calls judges making bad decisions if they agree with them, right? Mm. I mean, I will say that one of the things that we really, as Georgians, should be proud of is that the House Appropriations Committee is actually, they gave a couple million dollars to libraries, they just now recently had that come out of committee. And, you know, last year was the first year that the state of Georgia gave, I think it was a 25-cent per person to buy materials for the libraries. You know, we have beautiful libraries, but if we can't afford materials, then we're basically screwed. And hopefully they'll get it up to 50 cents this year. I know that Speaker Ralston is really a big library advocate. But, you know, that's the thing that makes someone...
Maybe you shouldn't have said that thing about politicians not returning books, Karen.
Well, he buys his own. So, you know, but that's the problem is that a lot of people, when they're successful, they can buy their own books and they forget how important libraries are, especially in rural areas, you know? Like something like 80%, you know, Celeste, you know I can talk forever about this, so I won't.
Yes,
I do. But 80% of kids are in rural areas. Their only access to reading or the internet is at their local library. So we have to remember libraries do a heck of a lot more than just have books, and they're so important to have. And even if you homeschool a kid, you know, textbooks are really expensive, and people who homeschool get them at the library. So it's only politicized if you let it get politicized, right? And if you don't agree with what one librarian is doing, you can find another librarian who disagrees.
Well, let's move on. There appears to be, there's no shortage of books, obviously, as long as you guys keep writing, that's for sure. But there is a shortage of substitute teachers.
I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. No Jaqueline here?
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay, so that's how it's gonna be. Y'all wanna play? I've got my eye on you, Jaqueline.
So there's a startup company called Parachute Teachers. It thinks people don't want the job of substitute because they're treated badly and they don't get to do very much in the classroom. The company wants to change that by creating a marketplace of experts who can fill in as teachers. So they would actually teach their expertise as opposed to the curriculum of the class. What do we think? And let's start with you, Nikki.
I love this idea. It would be great for someone to come into a class of students and instead of worrying about math, science, history, teach them about cooking, teach them about business, teach them about something different. I think that's still a very valuable use of the school day, and then it would encourage people to become substitute teachers.
Would it encourage you, Mike? Would you go substitute?
Yeah, I mean, I actually used to be a substitute teacher for a long time when I was still in school and starting out with freelance. And it was this perfect thing for freelance artists. And honestly, I just think that I like the parachute teacher idea for sure. But I also think just reaching out to certain types of artists and freelance creatives and things like that. It's such a perfect job where you can just kind of show up, you work a couple of days and then leave. I just think also just reaching out to those groups would be another way of filling those positions.
Karen, have you ever been a substitute teacher?
No, I don't really like children.
None of us do.
I'm okay with them.
Especially
I write books for them.
Yeah. Go ahead. Suck up to big kid. You know, I think there's a bigger problem, which is that teachers don't have much respect. I don't even think it's the money. I think it's just that people don't respect teachers and their opinions anymore. And there's been an erosion in the trust of these institutions. And I know that my teacher, I was terrified of her, my ninth grade teacher. And she was amazing because I wanted to please her. And teachers aren't allowed to make students fearful of failure anymore. And I think that that has a knock-on effect with substitute teachers, because as little respect as teachers in the classroom who are professionals get, substitute teachers have even less. So I think it's a systemic problem where we just need to support teachers more across the board.
Alejandro?
Well, as a former public school student who used to terrorize substitute teachers, I think it's a fantastic idea. I think we definitely need to reformulate how this system works, and bringing in people with different areas of expertise, whether it be artists or sports writers or filmmakers or someone that can engage someone different. Because when that substitute teacher showed up in my classroom looking for a Aaron, and they called me Alejandro, and, you know, that was it. The gloves were off, and we had a great time. So it's tough. You want to be able to provide an atmosphere where if the regular teacher isn't there, and let's be honest, the regular teacher probably doesn't get much respect at all anyway.
Yeah, I care.
So when the substitute comes in, you want to have someone that's going to engage them in something to get their thought process moving in a different direction. So I like it.
Okay, so then let's stay in school, because there's a bill in the Georgia State Legislature right now that might change the way both full-time and substitute teachers do their jobs.
Miss Dumbbum ain't your teacher today? I am. And I got a headache, so I say, time for recess.
But Mr. S, how do we get gold stars if we just have recess?
Okay, this legislation would require schools in Georgia to give kids recess, and it would bar those schools from taking recess away as punishment. Do we support that? Mike?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that there needs to be a lot more of this just physical activity, unstructured playtime in school anyway. I think there's a lot of points where they're really on task, and I don't have a backup. I don't know what the other form of punishment is. But I don't know that taking away recess is the best
way. Well, Karen doesn't like kids, so she might have an idea.
Lock them all in a closet. You know, I think that it should be up to the discretion, again, of the teachers as to whether or not a kid gets punished by being maybe not the entire recess, but taken out. It's just like our prison systems. That tells you how much I like kids. You know, when you take away rewards for good behavior, how do you establish discipline?
Right.
So I think that they should be able to take it away. I don't like that we're living in a state where people are talking about how local control needs to be established, and now the legislature's trying to tell us how to run schools. I also worry, you know, every classroom is different, and as a substitute teacher, you probably found this out. You know, everybody wants to think they're going to be dangerous minds, but then you get in an actual classroom with kids who have real behavioral problems, you know, and it's not that idyllic, I'm going to change all these poor inner city kids. It's more like, holy crap, I could get stabbed at any moment. So I think you have to really let the schools and the teachers decide how they're going to use that. But I think just personally that it's a great idea to bring back recess, because it's really important, not just for playing and getting that energy out, but learning how to play well with others.
Nikki, what do you think here?
Well, I feel uncomfortable that the conversation is happening with politicians. I would feel better if this came from educators. I definitely believe in recess. I think it's a good idea. But, you know, I thought we're trying to create a small government. Small government is so great. Well, then, you know, let the actual educators and teachers decide how to manage these kids, if recess is appropriate and how much, you know, we pass a lot of laws about a lot of things. And at some point, I'm wondering why.
Alejandro?
Thank goodness I never got stabbed at recess.
Yet.
There is no way that we should ever consider taking away recess as a punishment to a child. We're witnessing this increasingly sedentary society of these young children and an emerging health crisis around obesity rates in our kids who are young and diabetes and, you know, how that manifests when kids become teenagers and later adults and the strain that it's going to take in terms of hospitalization and health care and our overall health. I think it's important that kids, if they do not have the opportunity or they are not motivated to do so while they're home because they're sitting watching video games or in front of TVs, our kids are not outside as much as they used to. And I think that recess is so important for a young kid to just get out, run, get the blood moving, and just have some structured activity where they can get out and get some exercise.
You know how to reach us. If y'all of you listening have an opinion on this, and I bet you do, you can reach us on Twitter at OST Talk or find us on Facebook. We're hanging out in the break room, my panel today, four incredible authors with dangerous minds, Alejandro Denoir, Karen Slaughter, Nikki Salcedo, and Mike Lowry. So have you ever come up short in the grocery checkout line?
She has no cash.
No, she has no cash.
I'll get on another line, lady.
I have a dollar. Oh, yeah, I have a dollar. $1.
Okay, Amazon has an answer for that and a lot of other problems. Their new concept is Amazon Go. These are stores where shoppers add items to their digital cart. They're in a brick-and-mortar building. You pull things off the shelf, and then the computer keeps track of what you got in your cart and then charges you as you walk out of the store. No more checkout lines. Good idea or bad? Nikki?
Okay, this is a great idea in Atlanta just before the next big snowstorm. Get everyone to fill up their shopping carts with milk and eggs and bread and just rush right out the door. I mean, I'm behind this 100%, but only the night before snow days.
Karen, what do you think?
You know, I wonder what it. What about people who have disabilities who can't reach certain items, you know, if no one is there really to help them? I worry about that. And also, you know, as much as a writer, I support Amazon because they're such a big part of the market. I do wonder, okay, well, if you can't afford a phone, if you don't have a credit card, you know, how are you going to access this? And what happens if you get a situation like Uber where they've basically shut down the local taxi companies in a lot of small towns? Well, what if you can't afford to set up an account with them? What if you don't have a credit card? What if you don't have access to that? I mean, I just worry that it's going to become a place where, you know, a certain type of person in a certain economic range can afford it and get this great benefit, but everybody else is shut out.
Alejandro?
I mean, is the computer going to cut my cold cuts? Are they going to weigh my seafood? Whatever happened to the patience that we had as a society?
Oh, it's gone.
And sometimes, you know, we're in this increasingly fast-paced, modernized society, and I think we suffer in so many ways. And I look at people who depend on those minimum wage employment opportunities to be able to provide some food for their own kids. And what's going to happen to those jobs that are lost? In theory, it sounds great, but I think there are so many pitfalls that I'm not beyond standing behind line and a person who's writing a personal check and having to take 10 extra minutes because, hey, sometimes you just got to be patient and you can't get what you want when you want it.
Mike?
Well, I guess, too, I always think about, so right before I ever do the self-checkout lines, which have been around for years, yeah, I always think this is either A, going to be, you know, pretty quick and painless, or it's going to take roughly 12 times longer than going through a regular checkout. And this is something that's been around for a while, and it's still a nightmare. I mean, I feel, especially if you ever shop with kids and they're trying to help out and they keep taking things off of the scale where you've already put stuff, and then you know, just have to leave the kid at the grocery store as a form
of
punishment.
There's a lot of kid hatred today.
And and no recess for that child. But I think that it seems like a good idea. I don't know that it's super necessary, but it also seems like it's going to be just a big headache for roughly 15 years.
Okay, let's talk about something completely different. Last weekend, Beyoncé did not win Best Album, but she won the Grammy for Best Urban Contemporary Album, and she gave a very moving acceptance speech about the importance of diverse representation in the media.
We all experience pain and loss, and often we become inaudible. My intention for the film and album was to create a body of work that will give a voice to our pain, our struggles, our darkness, and our history, to confront issues that make us uncomfortable.
Okay, so a number of people had comments about this. Singer-songwriter Sufjan Stevens said the category of urban best urban contemporary album is racist. He said there's no need for that. It's just a place to put black artists. So do we agree with this? And let me go to Nikki first.
Okay, well, they're always going to try to put artists in labels, and this happens the same way in publishing industry. If you're black, you go into the black book section. If you're, you know, whatever, you go into another section. I just think it's funny in music, because does country imply that you only come from the country? Can you be a country singer but be from metropolitan Dallas or Atlanta? Are these things inherently racist? You know, I feel uncomfortable with us having to always put labels on things. And I just found out who Beyonce was this week, so I'm actually ahead of the curve.
I don't think that's accurate.
Mike?
Yeah, you know, I think just sort of a bigger thought. If I can just kind of answer something different for a second, I do think that it's kind of funny, this idea of awarding these large projects to this one artist, like Beyonce, who is obviously a good singer, but then the idea being that this is this album that she created, when it's absolutely just this huge group of writers and producers, and we're now then assuming that the award is not being given to her when it's the body of work of like a giant group of very big corporation type structure. Does that make sense?
But also talented producers and
writers. Yeah, talented
and
producers,
musicians.
Yeah. But I think that it's strange. It seems like a separate section that was made up to where another award could go to somebody else.
Alejandro, what do you think?
Well, since we're on the topic of Grammys and music, and we've got a bunch of people here who hate kids, I just want to reiterate that Wu-Tang loves the kids. But, you know, this topic isn't racist. You know, we're looking at an institution and larger institutions in our entertainment industry that are not diverse, that are not inclusive. This award, Album of the Year, in the last 20 years, four times, I think, has gone to African-American artists. And when we look historically at guys like Miles Davis, James Brown, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, they've changed the course of music six and seven times over.
Yeah. If you can do it in 10 seconds, Karen, what do you think?
I agree.
That is it for today. We want to hear from you always. You can always send us your thoughts on Twitter at OSD Talk or on Facebook. If you're in Savannah, check out the Savannah Book Festival. That's why we're here for today and the week. This is On Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great weekend.